Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with Dr. Francine Foss and Dr. Lynn Wilson. I'm Bruce Barber. Dr. Foss is a professor of medical oncology and dermatology, specializing in the treatment of lymphomas. Dr. Wilson is a professor of therapeutic radiology and an expert in the use of radiation to treat lung cancers. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can contact the doctors directly. The address is canceranswers@yale.edu, and the phone number is 1-888-234-4YCC. This evening, I'll be sitting in for Lynn and Francine, and my guest is Peter LaMothe, a cancer survivor from New Haven. Let's start just right from the beginning. Tell me about how you were diagnosed with cancer.
Sure. Well, it's I think every cancer patient, every cancer survivor has their own story, and mine is that on January 12th, 2006, I woke up before work to go running, and I stood in front of the mirror in my bathroom and saw this large swelling about the size of a golf ball on my neck, and I thought, gosh, you know, where did that come from? And completely out of character for me, I said to myself, well, if it's there tomorrow, I'm going to go to the doctor, because I'm a guy that kind of waits for things to, you know, develop or can kind of put them out of his mind and let them be. But this, I thought, gosh, this is pretty serious. You know, what is this? But interestingly enough, I also that night applied some Icy Hot to it, thinking, well, maybe it's just a knotted muscle or something. Who knows how it could have happened? That didn't do anything. The next morning, I went at 8 a.m. to see my primary care physician, who's this terrific guy, and I still see him to this day. And I went in, and he said, well, gosh, it looks kind of funny. Let's take a picture of that. So I had a CAT scan, and he knew immediately, you know, what it was and began to make some phone calls. And he said to me, do you work locally? Could you come back after a few hours when the scans are developed? And I said, sure, I'd be happy to. And I came back, and he sat me down, and he said, you know, we think this is cancer. We think it's a lymphoma. You have this explosive swelling of your lymph node. And I sort of just blanked out then. I didn't know quite what I was thinking or what I was going to do next. And I remember then interrupting him, though, and saying, wait a minute, did you say cancer? This can't be. That's impossible. I've run 3 marathons. I run, you know, road races. We eat really healthy at home. This is not happening to me. And he said, you know, it happens to people, and it's happening to you, we think.
And this happened at what age?
I was actually 2 days short of my 36th birthday.
No kidding.
So on January 13th, a Friday, I was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma.
So you went from being just perfectly healthy, living your life, running marathons, to cancer survivor in a day, you know, in 2 days.
Well, in a sense, yeah. I mean, then I began to connect the dots and realized that I was taking naps every weekend. You know, I'd wake up at 6 a.m. on a Saturday, go for a run, and by 11 o'clock, when our son, who wasn't even 2, would go down for a nap, I'd go down for a nap. And my wife would be like, what are you doing? You know, we have things to do around the house. Why are you so tired? And I thought to myself at the time, over a period of several months, well, I'm just, you know, I'm a new dad, I'm working hard and all this. And it was just exhaustion is one of the symptoms. And then we remembered that I had 2 episodes of very significant night sweats, you know, waking up completely saturated, the mattress, everything. And those are some of the key symptoms.
And then I use the term cancer survivor when you got your diagnosis, because that's what's kind of the interesting thing that's going on now in the field, that they're now classifying someone as a survivor at the point of diagnosis.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it makes total sense. I think, you know, from that first day when you find out that you have cancer and then you find out what you're going to do about it, you are working to survive.
Now, so we're going to go through your story, but let me stop you at this point and just say, having been through it, just that, you know, that must have been just that flood of that kind of panic feeling you get. What would you tell someone else who may get that diagnosis someday? Was there something that would have helped you? Is there just nothing you can do? You just have to go through it? Or is there something that would have helped you get through it?
I think you just have to go through it. I mean, it really does feel like you've fallen off a cliff and that you have no idea when you're going to stop falling. And the, you know, survivors and patients will often say that the most difficult period of time is between knowing you have cancer and finding out what you're going to do about it. which means, you know, what are your treatments going to be? What are your options? And that can take quite a long time, you know, some, in some cases, several weeks. So I think it's important to ask a lot of questions of your doctor, to get a second opinion. Everyone's entitled to that. And to think very carefully and plan, you know, have a plan in place for when your treatments begin, if you need coverage for your kids, if you need to talk to your employer, if you need to ask questions of your insurer, you know, put together a plan, knowing that it's not going to be perfect, that things change from week to week, but be as prepared as you possibly can, because you can do extraordinarily well in fighting cancer.
And it seems to me like it's almost like you've gotten a really bad job assignment now. You know, you're going to go through potentially some difficult treatments. You're going to have an uncertain future. But it sounds like, I guess, the answer really to the question for someone would be to treat it as a job and to go to work on you know, being very active, I guess, in your own treatment.
Absolutely. It is the most important thing you have to do every day for the next several months in front of you. And in some cases, it's several years. But it's a job. It's something you can't take your eyes off of. You've got to be very persistent. And you need a lot of help. Don't do it alone. You can't do it alone. Get as much help as you possibly can, even from sources and places you didn't think help would come from, or you didn't think or don't think should ask from. Get as much help as you possibly can.
We're speaking with Peter LaMothe, who's a cancer survivor, about his diagnosis. And so let's continue now. You had that initial shock. You took your own advice and started to get organized.
Yes, absolutely. And it wasn't me exclusively, of course. I had a strong network of friends. I have a terrific wife who was there with me for every appointment with the doctor, every infusion, was with me every weekend after chemotherapy treatments when you were really low, ran the household, answered questions of family and friends that they wouldn't ask me, you know, how I was feeling. And so she deserves a terrific amount of credit. I also had two friends who, prior to my diagnosis, I did not know had cancer. But as soon as they learned that I did, they came forward and told me about their experience. And I remember in particular one person, me saying to them, gosh, this is going to sound terrible, but I'm so glad you had cancer because it's going to help me a lot.
Interesting.
Yeah. So,
and that's something to stop and think about for a second. The fact that there were friends of yours that had had cancer and hadn't talked about it. Talk about the way you deal with your diagnosis. I mean, obviously, you're on the radio now talking about it, so it's something you're comfortable talking about. But do you think it's important? Is it depends on each person, or is it important to kind of share that with people?
I think it depends on each person. I know people who treat this as a chapter in their life, and when it's over, and they don't go back to it. They keep moving forward. And I know other people who get incredibly energized and mobilized by it and do lots of things, fundraisers, advocacy, are very much in front of their cancer and very much out there talking about it. I think it also has to do with your personality. I feel very comfortable talking about it. I felt comfortable talking about how I felt when I was going through the treatment. So I think each person has to determine how they want to, you know, in a sense, have a relationship with their cancer diagnosis and with their survivorship, knowing too that that relationship may wane over time or it may grow over time. I've not had too many people I know who've been diagnosed since I've had my experience, but I'm guessing that should a family member or a close friend of mine or someone, a neighbor, be diagnosed, that you know, I would rally and be there for them. But at the same time, too, as a result of my diagnosis and my experience, I chose to switch careers and leave museum management and move into fundraising at the Yale Cancer Center.
Because
I was living in New Haven. I'm from New Haven, and I felt after my experience that which was so profound. That I wanted to do something to help people who would go through a similar experience as mine. And what I could do best really was fundraising. You know, that's what you do as a director of a museum. And that's what I'm doing now for the Cancer Center at Yale.
Wow. And now, how long was it before you started actual treatment?
So I I started treatment on February 9th, 2006, so it was a little less than a month after that Friday the 13th diagnosis.
Mm-hmm. And so just to fill in that little gap there, kind of, so was that time spent doing what you've described really kind of doctor's appointments and research and all of that, deciding on a plan of treatment?
Absolutely, right. So I had my second opinion. I had some stress tests and other tests to determine the effects of, you know, potential effects that that the chemotherapy drugs could have on me. I certainly spoke to my employer. I contacted my health insurance plan. My wife and I made a plan at home for how we were going to deal with this. And so then when we hit the ground running on February 9th with my first chemotherapy treatment, still not quite knowing what to expect, we felt we had some certain things planned that would make it a little bit of an easier experience going into it.
And is there kind of a constant fear during this time?
I think there's for me anyways, there was a fairly constant fear because, you know, my prognosis was good. It was stage two of, you know, four stages. And I was young. I was otherwise healthy. My doctor felt that I would handle the chemotherapy very well. I could tolerate it well. And I was able to do other things during my chemotherapy, 6 months of chemotherapy, which were, you know, to run, to exercise, to go to work, to eat well. You have checkpoints along the way, and you hope you meet the marks. You hope that the tumor begins to shrink. You hope that you respond well to chemotherapy. You hope that your white blood cell counts don't plummet and that you don't get sick and that may have to interrupt your chemotherapy treatment. So there's a lot of fear. It's not always, you know, at the forefront of how you're feeling. You try to live the rest of your life and enjoy the good things in your life and have this be a part of it, a critically important part of it. But the fear is always there. And then I think the fear for me anyways was replaced by hope because I did respond really well. And things did go very well. I was able to tolerate the chemotherapy as best I could. I didn't have much nausea. I didn't have much pain. And again, you know, I could go out running 3 or 4 days after I had an infusion of chemotherapy. And then, you know, as I got to the end, and I think we'll discuss this later in our conversation, you know, you're not necessarily done with cancer once cancer leaves your body. You know, you're still dealing with the experience. And so you often hear people say, well, I'm cancer-free, but I don't quite feel free from cancer. And so that's a whole nother component to having to deal with the trauma of a cancer diagnosis and a cancer experience.
When did the fear really start to wane? What was it when you started getting reports back from that your counts were good?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the markers started to look good. The tumor was shrinking, and at one point before I ended my treatment, it was clear that the cancer was no longer showing up on PET scans. And so, to be absolutely certain, we completed all of the 6 cycles of chemotherapy, and then I had 13 radiation treatments to really mop up anything that might not be picked up by a PET scan. And then, you know, a new work began, the work of dealing with the trauma of sort of grieving for yourself, while at the same time knowing that you should feel incredibly happy that you don't have cancer. You don't quite always feel happy because you've gone through this really, really horrible experience.
So what was the time frame between diagnosis and when you finished up the actual treatments?
Basically, early February to early September of 2006.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then after that, that started what sounded like what sounds like a very profound change in your life as a human being.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It was only really a matter of weeks before, in my mind, I began to think that I wanted to do something in cancer. And so it really involved a lot of changes in our lives and in the life of my family. We had only recently moved out of state to pursue a new job opportunity for me. And very shortly after beginning that, I realized that it was something that meant more to the person I was before I had cancer than to the person I was going to become post-cancer. And that was very difficult for me and my family to while we respected those decisions and understood them, it was still difficult to act on them. But we did it, and you know, I will be eternally grateful to my wife for supporting me during that particular time.
So Peter LaMothe, cancer survivor, let's talk some more about your odyssey after your treatment for cancer when we come back from this break.
The American Cancer Society estimates that in 2010, over 2,000 people will be diagnosed with colorectal cancer in Connecticut alone, and nearly 150,000 in the U.S. Early detection is the key, and when detected early, colorectal cancer is easily treated and highly curable. Men and women over the age of 50 should have regular colonoscopies to screen for the disease. Patients with colorectal cancer have more hope than ever before. Each day, more patients are surviving the disease due to increased access to advanced therapies and specialized care. Clinical trials are currently underway at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers, like the one at Yale, to test innovative new treatments for colorectal cancer. New options include a Chinese herbal medicine being used in combination with chemotherapy to reduce side effects of treatment and help cancer drugs work more effectively. This has been a Medical Minute, and more information is available at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.
Back with Peter Lamoth, a cancer survivor. And Peter, when we left off, you were describing what happened from diagnosis to treatment. And then you described an amazing period of change after treatment ended. Describe that for us.
Well, I think, the first thing is that I realized soon after treatment that cancer would always in some way be a part of who I was. And I thought, if that's the case, well, can I make that as much of a positive as possible? And so I thought, well, I can use this experience to potentially make an impact, a positive impact on the lives of people I don't even know who someday will face that word cancer, will be told you have cancer, and have to come home and tell their spouse, their loved one, their family, and go through all the things that we had to go through, in many cases, probably with a worse prognosis.
Mm-hmm.
And so I decided that professionally I wanted to do something. And my background had been in museum management, which is predominantly fundraising for the institution. And so I came to the Yale Cancer Center to apply those skills in the development office and raise money for research and programs so that treatments are improved, patient care is continuously enhanced, and that there are more people like me who survive cancer.
And how long was it after your treatments were over that you started at Yale?
I think it was about 7 months. So I wrapped up treatment in late September of 06, and I began mid-April 07 at Yale.
And it's got to be, something that's amazing to bring to that job.
I think it gives me a lot of credibility with people who are interested in funding the things that we do, particularly if they've had a cancer experience. During our conversation, I'll share some information about myself when it's appropriate. And that you can see in a person's body language and in the things that they say too, that it changes when they learn that I've had cancer, when they know that we've had a similar or shared experience to some degree, that I understand some of the things that they went through or that a loved one went through. And it becomes a very different conversation and quite a deeper conversation, which is what I had hoped would happen. I mean, that was one of the intangibles I hoped to bring to the job, which has been effective so far.
And what would you say if you, as a cancer survivor, could pick an area where you'd love to see more money channeled?
Yeah, it's got to go into cancer research. Hmm. I mean, we still have made remarkable breakthroughs, and I'm not a clinician, I'm not a researcher, I'm not on the medical side of things, but what I do know as a cancer survivor and a person who's now worked sort of in this environment for the last few years is that we cannot conduct enough research. We cannot do enough inquiry. We cannot ask enough questions. And the more that we ask, the more that we learn, and the greater the benefit to the patient and to our population, not only for those people who have cancer, will be diagnosed with cancer, but the general population in terms of prevention and cancer control. Those things are critically important too, and research is being done in those areas.
You talked about when you were going through chemotherapy not being really so sick. And isn't that one of the things that has come from research, is that there are better drugs now to manage the symptoms than we've ever had?
I think that's true. I think that's certainly the case. And it's not only the drugs themselves, but diet and exercise and all of these other things that a person can do. I mean, I do feel that my particular journey through treatment was certainly helped by the drugs. There's absolutely no doubt about that. But I think that exercise, family support, positive attitude, you know, in some cases spirituality, religion, those things all are components in getting yourself better.
Let's talk about the family part of this also. It must have been difficult to both be managing kind of your emotions and your fear and theirs and incorporating, you know, their needs.
Yeah, I mean, I'm enormously fortunate because my wife let me be a cancer patient and first and foremost, and it was all about me getting better. And so she took care of a lot of the things at home that needed to be taken care of, kept a stiff upper lip when she had to, which was quite often. In many ways, her cancer experience was similar to mine, but as the spouse of someone who has potentially a deadly disease, it was different. And I think that in terms of survivorship, when you think of survivorship being broader than just the patient, including loved ones and families, there are needs there, too, for that part of the survivorship population that often go unaddressed. That's a critically important area, too.
And did you or any members of your family avail yourself of any support groups or any extra help to get through this?
In our particular case, we didn't avail ourselves to any particular support groups, although they were there. Because I had two friends who had a cancer experience, I sort of leaned on them and talked to them a lot, and they were terrific. I think if it wasn't for them, I would have joined a support group, either for men with cancer or people with lymphoma or young cancer patients or something like that, to just have that community of people who understand how you're feeling, that that are there for you on a fairly regular basis, that are also, you know, very well managed by clinicians or social workers or people in the medical field.
And what do you need to do for follow-up now? You stay in good physical shape, I would imagine.
Yeah. So
you were already on that path before your diagnosis.
So I have a terrific doctor at Yale, Stuart Seropian. And I see him about twice a year, although I see him more often now through the course of work, bumping into him here and there. But I am basically cancer-free. I'm almost at 5 years. I'm feeling terrific. It's kind of ironic we should be talking today just a few days after Labor Day, because it was really Labor Day of 2005, about 5 months before my diagnosis. I finished the 5K. It was the first time I'd run the 5K. The five previous years, I'd run the 20K. But I wasn't up to running the 20K distance that particular year, and I had a horrible race. My breathing was bad. I just knew something was wrong with me, but I couldn't pinpoint it. And never in my mind would I say, gosh, I should go get checked out for cancer. So I finished the race, and I barely, you know, I almost passed out. But I had a decent time, I have to say. You know, I was pretty happy with that. But just a few days ago, I returned and ran the 20K and had an absolutely terrific race.
Wow, congratulations.
So I feel like I've come full circle there.
You know, let's kind of go back to where we started in a way, which was the diagnosis, which really kind of, you said you had felt, you know, a little off leading up to this, but then seeing the fact that you needed to have something checked out. But having gone through this, is there any way that, you know, someone listening could prepare themselves better than you were prepared? To wake up one morning, see that, go to the doctor, and then pretty soon you're being told you have cancer.
Well, I think just generally speaking, people should be very attuned to their bodies, listen to what their bodies are telling them, try not to ignore pain or anything that they think is out of the ordinary. You know, things, of course, do come and go. We get colds, we have little bumps and bruises and things like that. But if there's anything that in the back of your mind is making you think twice, you should go to a doctor and have it checked out. And I think, too, for men and women, preventive measures, whether it be in the field of cancer or in other disease areas, are things that should be taken seriously. I think people should take their health really seriously. I felt after my diagnosis, suddenly life was pretty short. And now I feel life is pretty long. And it feels a lot better to think that life is long than life is short.
And how would you advise people to speak with children about cancer?
It's hard. My son knows I had cancer. He was not quite two when I was diagnosed. But after we came back, when I came to the Yale Cancer Center, we began to talk about my work and some of the doctors and things that I do. And he understands what I do. He understands why I do it. And he understands that I had cancer. And there have been, you know, there are obviously in anything lighter moments. And there were some lighter moments in cancer, in our cancer experience, and many of them associated with our son, who didn't quite understand the gravity of the situation. But he was terrific, and it's hard. And I would say talk to your doctor or talk to a social worker or someone at the medical center where you're being treated if you're currently under treatment about how to talk to your children.
And now in your role at Yale, what is it that is most exciting? What's really the great part of your job?
Well, there are actually two parts that are great in my job. One is the people that I work with. The clinicians, the doctors, the researchers, all the people associated with the Cancer Center who collectively are all focused on defeating cancer 1,000 different ways or preventing cancer in the first place. The other part of my job, which is terrific, are the people who choose to support cancer research and programs that help people with cancer. Because to see the positive feeling that they get when they decide that they're going to make a gift or they're going to do something to help the work that we do. It's really remarkable. And many of them say, gosh, if I knew I was going to feel this good, I would have given money sooner.
What percentage of donors have had a cancer experience?
Those that I work with, if you think about it, probably all of them. Because some degree or another, someone's been affected by cancer. I would say that roughly half of the people that I talk to have had cancer themselves or a loved one had cancer.
So coming back to your story, just talk a little more about the way you feel you're a different person now than you were before your diagnosis.
Well, I certainly, and this will sound a little bit cliched, but I certainly don't sweat as much of the small stuff anymore as I used to. I try to look at life both as a long time or a long stretch and as a short period of time. So, rather than just living life, you should take joy in living and that you should live with some purpose and try and do new things. Don't wait. Don't say, I'll get to that, when I retire or I'll try that, at some other point in time. Just try it now, repair friendships or relationships, start new ones, talk to your neighbors and, things that just generally make you feel good.
And I would imagine you formed some pretty special bonds with your caregivers during the experience as well.
Yeah, absolutely. They were definitely terrific. They have really, really, really hard jobs. Particularly those that deal with patients whose prognosis is not good and who face a really difficult road. And I don't know how they do it, but I'm glad that they're doing it because they're the right people.
And did you find there was an appropriate way to say thanks at the conclusion of your treatment to your doctor and to your nurses? And
I don't know if there was an appropriate way other than just to be enormously sincere, because that's how I felt. And now when I see my doctors, it just brings a smile to my face to see that here are people that returned me back to life.
And just any thoughts in closing that you think someone who has not had this conversation yet and doesn't think they're going to have it or is worried that they might have it, any just parting thoughts?
Take care of yourself now. Do as much as you can now to take care of yourself. Take preventive measures. Eat well, exercise, just a lot of common sense things that often we're too busy to do, or we overlook, or we think we'll get to at some other point in time. And I think that if you have had cancer or you've experienced cancer to one degree or another, get involved. And that doesn't necessarily mean, donating money or going out and fundraising or running a road race. All those things are terrific. But if someone down your street has cancer or is going through a cancer experience, cook them a few meals, shovel their driveway, offer to drive them to the hospital, take the spouse out for a drink or to go to a movie, something that has nothing to do with cancer, and feel free to talk to them about anything other than cancer. just get involved in those particular ways. That builds stronger relationships between people, builds stronger and healthier communities.
Peter LaMoth is a cancer survivor from New Haven, Connecticut. If you have questions or would like to share your comments, visit yalecancercenter.org, where you can also subscribe to our podcast and find written transcripts of past programs. I'm Bruce Barber, and you're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.